Welcome to All Signs with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan in for Ann this morning. Dollar stores or discount stores are convenient when you need quick access to toilet paper, snacks, greeting cards, craft supplies. But in some communities, residents are forced to rely on them for everything, as discount stores are the only neighborhood option. A new ordinance proposed in Cleveland would limit the number of discount stores, and Cleveland is one of the few cities across the country to try to change dollar store zoning laws. With me this morning in studio, John Lathrum III is the chairman of the North Linden Area Commission. Welcome, John.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Linden, I think, is home to, what, six, seven of these Family Dollar, Dollar General, Dollar Tree stores?
Yes, we have six Family Dollars. I'm not really sure how many of the Dollar Generals we have. But
those are the stores that we're talking about.
Yes.
I think there's three different names.
Yes.
And then Erica Thompson joins me. She is an assistant editor of Columbus Live magazine, and she wrote about the impact of discount stores and how they've affected Linden. And I want to mention that we post a link to her article on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. So, Erica, thank you for being with us here.
Thank you for having me.
And we do want to point out, we did reach out to dollar store officials from these stores. They declined our offer to be on the show. So we will try to be as balanced as possible without having their input here. So, Erica, first let's get to the real meat of what we're talking about when we say dollar stores. Which stores are we talking about?
Yes. Well, for example, Dollar Tree, which owns Family Dollar now. So Dollar Tree, Family Dollar, and Dollar General. You go in there, prices are right around a dollar or a few dollars cheaper for household items and packaged goods.
And what are we seeing in the proliferation of these stores? More and more of them, and only in certain parts of our neighborhoods?
Yeah. So, you know, the genesis of the story for me really came from a report that the Institute for Local Self-Reliance did. And according to their report, they're seeing a proliferation of these stores in low-income urban areas, predominantly African-American, and also rural areas, too.
So, Erica and John, I'm going to ask this question to both of you and Erica first. If consumers want to shop at these stores, and apparently they do, what's the issue?
So the issue is not that they exist. It's that when they don't have proper alternatives. So if we're talking about Linden here in Columbus, the Kroger, the only grocery store in the Northern Light Shopping Center, closed in 2018. Now, we do have a Saraga International grocery store that just opened in its place. But once that grocery store closed, there was not a proper alternative. So you had a lot of residents going to these dollar stores for the packaged goods. And, you know, there isn't fresh produce. So then you have health concerns in a neighborhood that already has some serious health disparities.
John?
Again, I'm going to agree with Erica on this. Selections limited to processed canned food, cereals, microwave meals, and snacks. Their fresh food that they advertise, quote unquote, is banquet mega bowls, fried chicken, frozen pizzas, lunch bowls, hot pockets, and just other processed foods, which are not nutritious for anybody, really.
So we're talking about a food desert, and that these possibly might these stores might be contributing to the fact that there's a food desert. Now, there is another store there, but what is your definition, John, of a food desert in Linden, and why do you feel like there's not any opportunities for folks in that neighborhood?
When I moved to Linden 25 years ago, there was a Big Bear and a Kroger. Beginning of last year, Kroger left. Big Bear has been gone forever, it seems like. These dollar stores across the country are moving in, and they're closing smaller mom-and-pop grocers. We have an IGA in the community, but we used to have two other ones. They're both closed down, so we have the one. When the dollar stores come in, they do offer discount costs for goods, but they end up closing other businesses down, and then in turn, we can't bring the new businesses in like we're trying to do in Linden right now.
So you do blame these stores for knocking out other businesses?
Yes.
What do your neighbors say? I mean, about your crusade, and have you talked to your neighbors?
I'm not really making a war against the dollar stores. What I would like to see them do is change their business model as far as fresh goods. I don't know if that's possible for them. I've reached out to them. My neighbors, most of them agree with this. There are those that are really on, you know, if they're making $18,000 a year, that is their only alternative. And unfortunately, I think we need to educate our residents how to to make better food choices and give them the opportunity. We don't have, if there is no opportunity, how can they do better?
And Erica, another point that you bring up in your article is that a lot of these stores really are not very pretty in the neighborhood. I mean, they, as you point out, aren't not necessarily kept up. And I don't know if that is because of the area that they're in and there's no zoning, or they don't have to, or as a business, they don't care.
Yes. So there is often a ton of trash out in the grass area, like around the sidewalks. And there's actually a resident, and I talk about them in my article, Lester Singleton, who was doing Facebook Live videos at the different Family Dollars, just showing you how much trash was built up. You also have graffiti on the floors in the stores. There's a lot of dirt. A couple of the stores have been closed because of rodent infestation. So it is really a blight in the neighborhood.
We're talking about dollar stores in neighborhoods and how they may affect other businesses in those neighborhoods. And again, I'm with Erica Thompson, the assistant editor for Columbus Alive magazine, and John Lathrum III, the North Linden Area Commission chair. We do know that there is a very small profit margin for these grocery stores, these large ones. So, John, what about the fact that maybe city or counties should try to step up? I mean, they've offered incentives in the Linden area for other things. Couldn't they offer incentives for something like this?
I've reached out to, you know, we're working on building urban density in Linden and housing and 3- and 4-story apartment buildings. And I've, you know, we just had the Affordable Housing Fund started for all of Franklin County. And my concern is if we bring all of these residents into a community, we have to be able to have products for them to purchase and to live on. We, of course, we need paper products and laundry soap and everything. But we, again, we need food and we need fresh quality produce. We have a farmer's market in Linden now starting this coming weekend. And that's great, but it only serves for 3 months of the year. What are we going to do for the other 9 months? I would like to see city council and our mayor encourage and foster more mom-and-pop stores that can be affordable for our community. In, I think it was Haven, Kansas, the store, it was a food liner. It had a, the population is about 1,200 people, and it's a mom-and-pop store. It is reported that 225 individuals a day would cycle through the store, picking up your basics like lettuce and chicken and meats and stuff. The Dollar General opened in Haven in February 2015, and the owner saw a drop in customers through Food Liner. Last year in 2018, there was 125 people. Sales dropped by 40%, and then they closed. They ended up closing late last year. That's what happened to our Kroger's probably, and I just think we need to redirect our business model for the food industry in Linden.
And I understand for the food industry, but if neighbors want to use these dollar stores, because let's face it, they are discounted and you do have a limited budget, is there a problem there?
One thing that Eric and I have talked about is giving back to the community, contributing trash to the community, and less than quality products is not helping our community. I would like to see them interact with our community in other ways. We have festivals, we have things going on, and we would like to see them contribute in some form back to Linden.
And Erica, there are food deserts in many places, and some people don't understand. A food desert in Linden, really? I mean, Vinton County didn't have a grocery store for 5 years. They finally got one, the entire county, they finally got one in 2017. So how do you explain to people there's a food desert in the middle of a city?
Yeah, it is. It is hard to explain often, but you have to think about folks who don't have transportation. Right. So, you know, I can hop in my car. If I don't have a grocery store within a couple miles, I can go somewhere else. But a lot of these residents can't. And if they're relying on the bus system, they have to wait. They have to take it to drop off their kids to childcare. They have to go to work. So that is very time consuming. And I also want to say something else, too. I might be jumping ahead. Forgive me. But I think the dollar store issue is like a symptom of like a greater concern. So Linden has a 45% rate, poverty rate, 45% of the residents live under the poverty line. And also the unemployment rate is 12.8%. So we could close all of the dollar stores, but we still have to address the issue that folks don't have jobs and don't have affordable housing. So, you know, a lot of people think that to solve this food issue, we have to solve those other options too. And if people have jobs and if they have secure housing, then maybe a Kroger will come back.
John?
On that note, when Kroger's did close, we look at the number of employees that store had versus the six family dollars that we have, and there's probably out of six family dollars, maybe 30 employees. So when Kroger closed, we lost a huge employer in our community, and I would like to see that brought back. That's it for that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm thinking back to when the people who lived in the Brewery District and in German Village for a long time also complained about the fact that there were no grocery stores down there. So you had them building all these apartments, just like you say it's happening in Linden, but nowhere for people to shop. But it took those people to get there in order for then the grocery stores to understand, okay, we can build here because we could make a profit. So between then and that happening, John, you know, what do you think you can do as a community, and how can the city help to either bring in another business or have maybe farmer markets that can operate in the winter and have a place where they can come and get some fresh foods?
Honestly, right now, our only other option for neighbors who can't get to area grocery stores, we're relying on food banks, and that's pretty unfortunate. One of the things that I noticed, the CEO of Dollar General, Todd Vasos, said in the Wall Street Journal, the economy is continuing to create more of our core customers. In other words, the more lower-income Americans struggle, the better our dollar stores do. I found that statement incredibly profound. It's kind of disturbing that this is where our country is going to, and I really hope that our government can step in some way and prevent this from happening.
And what another one of your big, from what I can tell, problems with dollar stores, Dollar General, is that, one, they don't give back to the community, so they're not engaged with the people that are that they're profiting from. And then they don't contribute to the neighborhood in jobs or in keeping up, where they making them a part of the community that people would be, the storefronts would be proud because they're, so all those things, that's a company. And how do you even try to address that?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we can't get through to the dollar stores, we can't get through to the dollar store. So, you know, as John mentioned, it's really going to be about putting pressure on the city. And, you know, Columbus came up with this fabulous One Linden plan because they realized that there are so many economic issues in Linden. And it's great, but now I'm waiting for the next step to solve all of these issues. And really, across the nation, you're seeing a lot of, like, grassroots development around this issue. So we talked about Cleveland and their ordinance. There's also a Tulsa City Council ordinance in Oklahoma. And also recently as last week in Dayton, the community there gathered around to stop a couple of Family Dollars from serving alcohol. So it's really going to take a combination of city effort and community effort. And, you know, as I mentioned with the resident who was doing the Facebook Live videos, those got on my radar. What John's work has got on my radar, we got on your radar. So I'm hoping that this is just the start of some action in the city here.
Some grassroots efforts. So we're going to go to the phones right now. And this is John. He lives in South Linden. John, your question or comment?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I'm from South Linden. I grew up in South Linden, graduated from Linden McKinley High School, a proud Panther. And I live just on the other side of the line now. I'm on the North Linden side, but I'm still in the Linden community. And I just wanted to give a little bit more historical perspective on why health disparities and food deserts have metastasized or gotten as bad as they are in the South Linden area. And really what we're looking at has to do with decades of political neglect and political mismanagement. And until we correct that, it's going to be very hard to make structural changes in the South Linden community that the local residents themselves will benefit from. We have health disparities challenges, as I said, high infant mortality, high unemployment, poor educational outcomes, fair housing challenges. And that's just like sort of the tip of the iceberg. But until we focus our local political energies as a community, which I and several of our colleagues in the local community are leading an effort to actually annex the greater South Linden area, create our own local municipality so that we can focus very intensely on the challenges that confront the residents in the greater South Linden area. That is a proactive step forward. Also supporting local candidates for city council like Mr. Joe Motil. We need some new ethical leadership in our city government so better public policies. And that's what I wanted to say.
John, thank you. I appreciate that comment. And before we take a break, I don't know, John, since you live in the Linden area, if you had anything in response to his comments?
As someone who's lived in the community for 25 years, I totally agree with John. It does start at our government level, but it's up to us as individuals, as you had said, to begin this grassroots movement.
Okay, we're going to take a break now. Listeners, you can join the conversation about food and other issues in the Linden area. You can call us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back, and you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, in for Ann today. Dollar stores or discount stores are convenient when you need quick access to paper products, snacks, greeting cards. But in some communities, residents are forced to rely on them for everything, as discount stores are the only neighborhood option. We're talking about the impact of discount stores and how some communities have responded. Lewis Hyman is an associate professor of history and director of the Institute for Workplace Studies at Cornell University. He has researched the business and community impact of discount stores. Lewis, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on today. I'm excited to talk about this.
Good, good. And you have done a lot of research on this. Well, going to that research, what are you seeing in discount stores as far as being problematic for low-income and rural communities?
Well, I think it's really interesting to think about different kinds of dollar stores. You know, we just casually say dollar store, but actually Dollar Tree and Family Dollar are quite different. So even though they're part of the same company, when Dollar Tree bought Family Dollar a few years ago, they have very different kinds of products. Dollar Tree's inventory mix is the party supplies you go to when you want cheap champagne for your cheap champagne plastic cups for your suburban party, whereas Family Dollar is much more of a food store. And certainly in urban areas, Family Dollars have been part of this food desert problem where people only have access to these stores that have boxed food and canned food. And this is also true in rural America, where communities that were served by local grocers have found themselves, those local grocers, put out of business by Family Dollar, and for very detrimental effects on the health of those communities.
And are you seeing, as our guest previously pointed out, that these discount stores are what are driving away other mom-and-pop grocers, excuse me, that do have access to meats and fresh vegetables and other things like that?
Yes, I would agree with that. The stores, when these sort of dollar stores come in, especially Family Dollar, they offer people a very cheap array of, you know, boxes of mac and cheese or cans of beans. And then they, you know, hard-pressed working people don't want to go to multiple places to go shopping. So they say, hey, I'll just buy this and I don't need to go and buy fresh meat or vegetables or any other kinds of fresh food. And once this happens, you can see very strong health effects on communities in this way, both in rural and urban America.
But do you think that these discount stores are also helpful to folks in these communities where their income is low?
Absolutely. So especially in urban America, where people had to rely on corner stores, which have go by a variety of names throughout the country, you know, these kinds of stores offer a very similar kind of product selection at a lower price point. So this is why people are making those choices, that, you know, wages are stagnant, you know, it's hard to find work for lots of people, and this helps them. And so it helps people, but cheaper is not always the best option.
What do we know about how these stores impact suburban districts? Are there many there, or not as many?
Oh, there's lots of suburban dollar stores, but in suburban locations, they're part of a mix of shopping opportunities. You can go to a dollar store for greeting cards and for, you know, cheap plastic goods from China, but then you can go to, you know, Stop and Shop or Whole Foods, and it's part of a portfolio of options that people have. Options that you don't have in transportation-limited urban environments or just the vast distances in rural America.
So you're saying that folks in rural areas, urban areas, view these stores differently than suburban folks?
Yes, absolutely. Suburban people think it's just another place to go that's even cheaper than Target when you want cheap stuff for your kid's birthday party, whereas for rural people and for urban people who are low in income spectrum, this is just a way of making ends meet to make it possible to survive. And, you know, that's what they're doing. They're trying to just getting by.
We have a phone call. We're going to take a call from Barbara. Barbara, what is your question or comment, please? You're on the air.
Instead of demonizing dollar stores, which are just selling people what they choose to buy, here are some practical alternatives. One would be, I think we've all heard of or been to a bookmobile. How about starting up foodmobiles that are parked in a specific place on a specific day, and people can come there and buy fresh fruits and vegetables and meats? And because the overhead would be lower, it would be easier for somebody to make a profit that way.
Barbara, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Another idea would be, get someone to set up a shuttle service to and from the larger grocery stores.
Barbara, thank you for that question and comment. And Lewis, you've been studying this, so what do you see about some of her suggestions? Would they work?
Yeah, I'm certainly not demonizing dollar stores. I think it's just part of, it's hard to make, to sell poor people expensive things. So I think that is, it's not the fault of dollar stores or the fault of these consumers. It's just part of the way in which our economy operates. We have seen lots of communities. So I'm from Baltimore, and we have a farmers market in various parts of the city on weekends to help connect urban people with farm fresh goods. I mean, that's part of the story. But the truth of the matter is that people are very time constrained. It's not just dollar stores. It's why do people eat so much at, you know, on the dollar menu at McDonald's? It's because it's cheap, it's fast, and they have to get home after work, and they have lots of kids that are hungry. So I think it's part of the time constraint that people are under, as well as the budget constraint. So, you know, offering a shuttle service sounds all well and good, but, you know, people don't have time to do that. And I think that that's the problem. The question is, how do we get sort of the convenience and low prices of suburban grocery stores into these communities? And it might take subsidies. I mean, we offer tax breaks all the time for big factories. Maybe we need to offer tax breaks for grocery stores as well.
Lewis, thank you. We are going to take a break, and we're speaking with Lewis Hyman, Associate Professor of History and Director of the Institute for Workplace Studies at Cornell University, and about discount stores and possibly problems dealing with them in some of our urban communities. We'll take a break and be right back. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan in for Ann today. Dollar stores or discount stores are convenient when you need quick access to toilet products and snacks and greeting cards, but in some communities, residents are forced to rely on them for everything, as discount stores are the only neighborhood option. We're talking about the impact of discount stores and how some communities have responded. Lewis Hyman is an associate professor of history and director of the Institute for Workplace Studies at Cornell University. He's researched the business and community impact of discount stores. And Lewis, thank you for staying with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And also, we're going to bring to the show Cliff Cahaley. He's the city manager of Mesquite, Texas. And Mesquite approved an ordinance in 2018 to limit the number of dollar stores in the area, one of the first cities to try to do that. Cliff, thanks for joining me.
Glad to join you as well.
Good. And I wanted to start, Lewis, with a question because I think this maybe sets the stage for where we're going. I did not know the history behind these discount stores. I didn't realize they've been along for so long. When did they start? I mean, to me, it was just 10 years ago I started seeing them spring up, but apparently that's not the case.
No, they've been around for decades in their modern form. And, of course, there's always been different kinds of local discount stores. But this is the real flood of these stores was made possible after the 1970s, and just the same way as Walmart is made possible after the 1970s, where, you know, Dollar Tree gets most of its inventory, 40% of its inventory from Chinese factories. So it's part, they're the low-end expression of globalization.
And so is this another sign of changing retail in our country? First, we had big box stores, then online shopping, and now these smaller discount stores are changing the retail landscape.
Absolutely. They are just the version of Walmart that's a very small store. And that was the impetus behind Dollar Tree's buying of Family Dollar. They thought they could buy Family Dollar, which actually is quite different. Family Dollar is canned food and, you know, groceries and things like that. And Dollar Tree thought they could buy Family Dollar and then bring it up to the profitability of Dollar Tree, which hasn't turned out to be the case, that they are actually closing hundreds of stores. And if you think it's bad to have a Family Dollar in your neighborhood that drives out the mom-pa grocery store, well, it's even worse once that mom-pa is under and Family Dollar is closed, then people have even fewer options. And that's what we're going to see in the next year.
So what is the impact going to be on grocery stores from these and other ways that they are being forced out of communities?
Well, traditional grocery stores are under threat, especially by Walmart supercenters, which just sell, I think they're now the largest grocers in America. They are able to cross-subsidize their groceries from their other kinds of profits. And all the different big chains are trying to make a play for the grocery space. It's the place where there hasn't been as much penetration by e-commerce. So this is why Amazon bought Whole Foods. It was an attempt to get into the grocery business because they know, as Walmart knew, that you need to buy food every single day to live. And if you buy your food in a place, well, you're probably going to buy something else as well. And so that's what they're trying to do. And we can see the competition on Family Dollar, on Dollar Tree, as well from this emergence of e-commerce and grocery. We're going to see a lot of growth in that space in the next few years.
Let's go down to the local level again. Cliff, why was an ordinance needed to limit the number of dollar stores in Mesquite, Texas?
Well, over course of about 2 years, we had a proliferation of applications for stores. We began to see several of them kind of pop up in neighborhoods, and we were having the concern that they were going to drive out the opportunity for your more traditional grocery stores. Plus, we also saw a concentration of these stores growing in some neighborhoods where you'd have two or three within a few blocks of each other due to the different stores that were looking at Mesquite.
And did you see that all of these that were popping up were still doing relatively good business, even though they were in close proximity to each other?
We did not do a lot of analysis of their business success, but we also found that there was a lot of competition amongst the stores.
What did these stores do to your city? How did you see them as negatively impacting Mesquite?
Our biggest concern was proliferation and the numbers coming in and competing with grocery stores. And we had some areas in town that we would almost call a food desert that did not have a traditional grocery store with a lot of fresh foods. And we were having trouble locating stores in those areas. And one of the reasons we were told was the number of dollar stores in the area.
What did customers, neighbors, say about the ordinance? Were they pleased, displeased? Did they feel like you were taking some of the stores where they had buying power away from them?
No, we did not. Our ordinance did not impact any existing stores. What it did was to any new store coming in had to be a certain distance from an existing store, 5,000 feet.
Now that you have this ordinance in place, now where do you go when you talk about a food desert? Where do you go next to try to bring in other stores that would offer more healthful foods for these folks?
Well, we still go to your traditional grocery stores. In this area, it's Kroger, Tom Thumb, Albertsons, and we work with them to try to find locations. But one of the other things that we're doing is working with the dollar stores and the, what we call them, variety stores, to bring in fresh foods. And part of the ordinance that we put in place requires 10% of their floor surface be dedicated to fresh foods.
What's the reaction from the stores?
So far, we have not heard any negative reaction. We've had one application come in without any problem with the 10% fresh food requirement.
So you feel, as a city, it was part of your duty to try to give incentives, subsidies to some of these folks in order that, you know, some neighborhoods had that access?
For a grocery retailer, it's something we would consider. We have not had to do an incentive for a grocery store in several years.
And back to you, Lewis. You say that a business and economics professor at the College of William and Mary was quoted in an article saying, dollar stores have thought pretty carefully about their community support strategy. They've localized it. What does that mean, and the community support for these stores?
Well, I think people love them. I think it speaks to how your earlier caller was frustrated when I was critical in any way. People love dollar stores, just like they love their Walmarts. They find cheap stuff there that they like. They can buy toys for their kids. They can buy food for that night. But that doesn't mean that it should be the only option. And the story here is that, yeah, we should have dollar stores, but we should have other kinds of options for our communities as well. And I think that's the story we're hearing in Texas, right? That we are saying, look, we want to help dollar stores be a better option. We don't want to put them out of business. We don't want to ban them, but we just want to make sure that when people make that one trip, right, because they're not going to go to multiple places, when they make that one trip after work, they have the option to buy fresh food for their kids as well.
Cliff, what's the reception to the ordinance been like from both the dollar store folks and residents in the neighborhood?
Well, I think the residents were very supportive of the efforts just because of the concern with the concentration. We had one area that had $3 stores within a couple of blocks of each other. And so that was their main concern. So we feel like the citizens have been very supportive. And the retail chain have not come out and said anything negative. In fact, we had one that went through the process and passed and had no issues with adhering to the requirements in the ordinance.
I wonder if that is because you are not one of the only communities that is reaching out to them saying that, you know, maybe something needs to be done about these as far as the number in one area.
I would assume that they would be aware of the concerns that have been brought up, and especially in Texas with the concern with food deserts and the urban areas. I think they're probably more aware of those issues now.
What is the specifics of your ordinance? I mean, blocks that they can't be in, an area of each other? How is it worded?
Basically, it's a separation of 5,000 feet, and then the requirement for 10% of the floor space for fresh foods, fruits, meats, and other typical grocery store products.
And I was going to ask you what you mean by fresh foods, and where are they getting these? Are they reliable sources? Are they going to be good for the consumer?
I would assume that, like any retailer, they're going to find a supplier that's providing fresh fruits. I don't think there's a problem obtaining those types of products in this area. It's readily available.
Cliff, do you see this happening in other, and have you had calls from other communities about how you did it and they want to replicate what you did?
Yes, we've had inquiries from several cities that are interested in how we crafted our ordinance and how we landed on the 5,000 foot separation, and really what the response has been from the stores that have decided to locate. And since we passed the ordinance, we've only had the one example, but I would consider it a good example of us being open to a dollar store or a variety store, finding an area to be in, and understanding the requirements and adhering to them.
Now that you have these requirements in place, do you think you will see a new emergence of the corner mom and pop store that would offer more fresh groceries to folks, or even bigger grocery store chains, now that they know that the competition might be a little more leveled?
I would hope so. I would hope that a large grocer that finds an area that's just underserved would feel a little bit more comfortable coming in with not having a concentration of competition.
And, Luce, I'm going to go to you, too, about these, quote, food deserts. As I mentioned earlier, we had a county here in Ohio, Vinton County, that hadn't had, the entire county did not have a grocery store for 5 years. They just recently opened one. I know dollar stores aren't the only thing to blame, if there is any blame. How can we start to solve this problem in a larger scale, as you talked about, the Walmarts of the world, or different ways in the retail industry that we can deal with this?
Well, one of the challenges is that when Walmart begins to dominate a grocery industry in an area, it puts not just the local mom-and-pop stores out of business, but also the distributors. So it's possible to say to a local dollar store, well, supply fresh food, because there are still distributors that supply a variety of different retailers with food. And if Walmart comes in and really dominates the grocery landscape, well, they have their own internal supply chains that have nothing to do with the local distribution network. And so this is the challenge, how do we create demand for those distributors who are under, real attack from the incredible buying power of Walmart?
But there's so, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. So I think that's part of the story, that it's not just about the part where you and I shop, but also the sort of back end of the supply chain for how food moves in this country.
And it is a slim margin that grocery stores have compared to some of the other type of retail establishments.
Yes, and it's always been thus. They are a high volume, low margin business. And so if there's any shift in that volume, if they lose, a lot of shopping to these other stores, they go out of business pretty quickly. And that's the story about where do you go on that one trip after work? That's why it matters so much that we make that one trip include fresh food.
So what do you think about what Mesquite is doing, having some of these folks add the fresh foods to their stores? The dollar store things.
Yeah. I think it's a great policy. Yeah, and also it allows for different dollar stores that are competitive with one another not to be penalized for the added cost of adding fresh food to their product mix, right? So everybody has the same requirement. It's a level playing field. There isn't just one store that can drop its prices because they don't have to deal with the more expensive perishable goods. So I think doing it all at once makes sense. I think we need to do it as before we start losing all those distributors around the country.
And you mentioned Walmart, but then again, if people don't have cars or access to a Walmart, it really doesn't matter how inexpensive everything is if you can't get to it.
Absolutely. And so it's much part of the food desert is the transportation desert. Are you going to ride a bus out if you're an urban person to the supercenter, or are you just going to walk down the street to the Family Dollar? And certainly in a lot of places, you can't have Amazon deliver packages to your house. And the kinds of things they're going to deliver are, if they deliver fresh food, there's a lot of urban fresh delivery service as well. You still have to be at home for that. And with people working so many hours these days, that's not always possible or convenient. So there's a lot of challenges that have less to do with grocery stores and more to do with how we work these days.
Hmm. Cliff, do you see your neighbors benefiting from your new rules regarding dollar stores? Do they seem to be going to them and getting fresh foods?
Well, we only have the one example of the one store that has come in under the new regulations, but I think having the ability to walk to a store and making sure that we didn't separate them too far was one of the benefits that we found with our ordinance. We did not want to make it impossible for somebody in a neighborhood who did not have adequate transportation to access a variety store or a grocery store.
And the result and the reaction from neighbors is you didn't take away too many of their dollar stores, that they were still able to go there as a consumer and get things they wanted at a discount price.
We had about 19 stores in our community, so and they were spread out throughout the area. So I don't think anybody has been negatively impacted by not having one nearby.
Thank you, Cliff. Lewis Hyman is an associate professor of history and director of the Institute for Workplace Studies at Cornell University. So Lewis, I'm going to ask, this is a problem that we've uncovered today. And a couple solutions have been offered. One is to ask some of these dollar store folks to add different type of food to their plate to offer to the neighbors and the residents. What other solutions are out there?
Well, there's tax incentives for traditional groceries that we can offer. We do that a lot for job creation in manufacturing or other kinds of stores. But we can also do that for groceries, which, of course, create lots of jobs as well. We can really try to figure out, talk to distributors and make sure that they are getting the support they need and find out their business challenges and support them and try to figure out how we can create more opportunities, more retail opportunities for consumers that want to walk or that have to walk and make sure that we keep access easy and cheap and local.
Looking at the entire retail industry, because everything was big, are we now maybe going to focus on everything being small again and back to local neighborhoods, Lewis?
Yes. I think that, you know, one of the turns in the last decade has been that people don't want to travel so far all the time. And, you know, in a lot of ways, even though they're a big chain, dollar stores feel part of our everyday fabric. They feel like the place we can go to celebrate moments in our lives as well as get our daily needs met. So, you know, even though it seems like it's part of a big brand, it's actually part of our family. And so I think that's the secret. How do we help them become better members of our community?
Do you see more ordinances such as the one enacted in Mesquite, Texas, going forward? I understand Cleveland is thinking about something similar. Wondered if you'd heard anything.
I had not, but I suspect that as the word gets out and people see whether it's successful or not, people don't want to regulate businesses out of existence. They want to make businesses work for everyone, including the shareholders. And so this is the tricky balance. So I think it's going to need to be a careful collaboration between businesses and the government and the communities to make sure that people get the outcome that's needed.
And also, talking about what's available in these stores, there have been some complaints from some of the stores in my reading online that the Chinese tariffs possibly are hurting some of these stores because that's where they get a lot of what they offer and can offer at a reduced price.
Yes. So this is the big constraint on Dollar Tree, which had a huge product mix from China in a way that Family Dollar did not. But since Family Dollar is the less profitable arm of the Dollar Tree corporation, they had to sort of shut down a bunch of Family Dollars. And so this is putting a real pressure on those stores to make ends meet. They don't have the same kind of, you know, reserves that Walmart has or the alternatives. Walmart is a big online retailer now. People don't know that as much. But Dollar Tree is not. So there is a way in which these could be really hurting these kinds of stores.
Cliff, do you see any worries from your neighborhood stores that they're having to close because of tariffs or other outside interests that are, you know, hampering what they can offer?
No, we haven't seen anything like that from any of our grocery stores. I think Lewis had mentioned the margins for grocery stores, and I think that's where we're seeing the biggest concern mm-hmm. is just the amount of the number of stores and their market share of the community. And that's what we've really experienced with some of our grocery stores that have started to struggle is mainly because of just the total nature of retail markets with home delivery and trying to compete with all of that.
So, Lewis, on the larger scale of this, is there any way for these stores, other than closing, to respond to this pressure? Or is this just going to be, you know, those who can hang in there are going to be the winners?
Well, I think Family Dollar historically had been separate from Dollar Tree. So I think one of the, you know, either Dollar Tree divests itself of a Family Dollar, which it bought, you know, just 5 years ago, because really this is the pressure on Dollar Tree. They're trying to make themselves work. But, you know, some other store will rise up. You know, there are a variety of dollar stores in America. So someone's going to be okay. And that one that's okay will rely on domestically produced goods. That, you know, there's a reason why that grocery stores aren't as hard hit. It's because the food we eat is regulated. The food we eat is American made. We don't buy our food mostly from China, where we buy, you know, cheap things. So I think that's the trick. And in the end, someone will come a victor, and that's how markets work.
And Cliff, back to you for just a moment regarding your stores. One of the complaints here in Columbus was that the stores were not run very cleanly. They didn't hire very employees that there's a large turnover. The stores outside and inside were a mess. Have you had any problem with the stores or the companies themselves being a good neighbor?
It varies from store to store. We've had some operators and managers that have not done a very good job of maintaining their stores or the outside appearance. But for the most part, what we found when we were doing the ordinance is we did a lot of research on the stores that we had. We found that they were clean, that the people, the managers were taking care of them. They had their regular customers, and so they did do the upkeep. So any issues that we've had have been isolated to one or two stores. It's not something I would generalize for the whole, for all of them in Mesquite.
And because of what you've done in the ordinance, do you think that that will be attractive to other investors to see, okay, there's a limit to these stores, there's room for me?
I would hope so. Again, we don't want to try to move any, restrict any business from coming in. We just want to make sure that there are opportunities for the bigger grocery stores or the even smaller retailers to come in and not be edged out by having $3 stores within 300 feet of each other.
This seems to be a wide-ranging issue that we've just discussed today. It went from dollar stores to food deserts to transportation to all those other things. And I thank you both. And as we leave this, Cliff, I thank you, the city manager of Mesquite, Texas, where they put an ordinance in place to at least limit the number of dollar stores. And Lewis Hyman is the associate professor of history and director of the Institute for Workplace Studies at Cornell. And Lewis, before I let you go, I'm just curious as to what you see as the future for dollar stores as a whole, be it in, you know, ordinances like the Mesquite is putting in, or just because of the economy in general?
Well, I think we're going to see a big shakeup in the next couple of years. We're probably going to see Dollar Tree breaking up in various ways, or some competitor coming in, or some kind of serious reorganization. And I'm very worried about what this means for communities that do rely on Family Dollar, that do for their food needs. So I think that's what we're going to see. I think these tariffs are going to really affect American consumers in a ways that we don't fully understand at this point.
And those who can compete the best win.
That's right.
Lewis Hyman and Cliff Cahilly, thank you both very much for joining me today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And that's it for today. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Gail Hogan. This has been All Size with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.